I'm George Kittle.
What's up? It's Brock Purdy.
And you're listening to the Niner Guys.
The Niner Guys. Woo!
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Niner Guys Playoff Edition. That's right, Niners had the week off, but that did not stop the NFL scriptwriters from really reeling in all the fans this weekend. There were a lot of stressed out fans, at least from what I saw in the stands, including grown men crying in Detroit. The blue collar of blue collar city had tears. We'll get into the Niners opponent in just a minute. But Jerry, super wild card weekend spanned 3 days this year because of the blizzard in Buffalo. So, you know, I'm actually thinking the NFL may have really enjoyed having two games a day, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. So did you watch them all? Did you watch Peacock? Did you enjoy?
I saw some of it. I saw some of the Peacock. Okay. You know me. I'm not a big fan of games that within the elements because you know that it's just they're not at their peak form and it just looked miserable. So I did watch some of that. I actually missed the Buffalo game because I'd totally forgotten that it was in the middle of the day on Monday. That I just thought, oh, they moved it to Monday. So much like your typical Monday night football games early in the season, they'll kind of have them either back-to-back close in the evening, late afternoon, evening, or almost at the same time. And so that one I did not see. But I saw most of the other ones. And in terms of, you know, outcomes, what I did not foresee would be the Texans dominating the Browns and then the Packers, the future Niner opponent, yep, completely dismantling them boys. Speaking yep of fans who are crying. I can't believe how far the Eagles have fallen since getting their asses whipped by the Niners. But Philadelphia looked every bit the downtrodden team that went 1-5 to finish the regular season. And, you know, I guess as their, you know, defense just missed tons of tackles. And yeah, then the offense was just so uninspired that they even failed on their beloved brotherly shove.
Yeah, you know, hey, some things, you know, nothing makes me happier than Nick Sirianni looking completely dumbfounded there on the sideline. Like,
I believe the loss might have been the final nail in Sirianni's coffin because it sure looks like he lost the team and perhaps the real geniuses behind last season's success were their former coordinators, Shane Steichen and Jonathan Gannon. And yep, now you've got Jalen Hurts, you know, looking like a shadow of his former self and mm-hmm Dallas Goedert yelling at him on the sideline. And you got AJ Brown not even showing up at the game and scrubs his Instagram account of all things Eagles. So yeah, it's kind of hard to imagine that this is the same team that started the season 10-1.
It's hard to imagine this is the same team that was 3 points away, minutes away, you know, a bad PI call away from being the Super Bowl champions, you know, 12 months ago, 11 months ago. So, but let's go back to Saturday. You mentioned Texans Browns. I honestly thought that Joe Flacco and the Browns and the Browns defense was going to be enough to at least stymie CJ Stroud and the Texans. I thought this was going to end up being kind of one of those low scoring, you know, 24-21, 24-20 games with the Browns coming out on top, led by their defense. And, you know, I was close on the Browns score. They got 14, but the Texans put up 45, including two pick sixes in like 16 seconds. So good thing I am not a big betting man because definitely would have lost that game right off the bat. So thoughts on that game?
Yeah, and the FU Deshaun Watson Bowl as some
people. Yeah, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Flacco definitely turned back into a pumpkin or a couch potato, whatever, what have you, while CJ Stroud solidified his status as a rising star, or maybe not even rising, as a star in the yep NFL. Yep. You mentioned Flacco's two ill-advised pick sixes, you know, which pretty much sealed the game. But then you also, on the other side of things, had Stroud racking up, you know, a clean 274 yards, three touchdowns, and no interceptions.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
Yeah. And getting to I don't think he did, but he could have had a hot dog in the fourth quarter a la Mark Sanchez, because the Texans were just cruising late in that game. The other AFC game that happened on Saturday, Dolphins traveled to the Chiefs. This was your Peacock only game. 23 million people apparently watched it via Peacock or NFL Plus.
I think all those people watched for the game, or did they watch to see if anybody was going to die in that cold?
Well, I think it was a little of both, and there were plenty of idiots out there with no shirt on, even though it was negative something, but felt like negative 25. So, yeah. Not surprised the Chiefs won, especially knowing the elements, especially knowing having the reeling that the Dolphins did late in the season. I'm actually interested to see Hard Knocks. I don't even know if they are doing another Hard Knocks. I don't know if it ended at the regular season, which would be a bummer, because I would love to see kind of the aftermath of what happened, and the leading up to it, if there was any, like, oh my gosh, I can't believe we're going to have to play in this weather. So the Dolphins fall 26-7. I don't know. I don't know how much you can take from it, because it was just such an ice bowl-ish game. But Tua didn't look good. The Dolphins' offense did not look inspired. They couldn't get the running game going. Mahomes looked okay. Kelsey dropped some pass. I mean, it wasn't a really good aesthetically looking game. But it just, I think the elements were obviously a huge issue, but the Dolphins just seemed uninspired. And you mentioned the Eagles going from 10-1 to crash and burn in the end. I mean, the Dolphins were, they could have won the AFC East about 5 weeks ago. All they had to do was like win another game. And they, after that game against, what was it, Dallas, kind of a, it was a primetime game. Boy, they stubbed their toe hard against the Ravens. They couldn't finish the job against the Bills. They dropped from the 2 seed to the 7 seed. So thoughts on that game, and specifically, what's Miami going to do? I mean, you got Tua going into the last year of his contract. You got Mike McDaniel. You know, is he the guy? You know, we talked a few weeks ago about how he even admitted, look, I was never even a coordinator. I was ready for the job when asked, right? And is that coming back to bite him, that he doesn't have the experience of running a whole organization, running, you know, divvying up the duties, but still maintaining play calling duties? What are your thoughts?
Well, as far as Mike McDaniel is concerned, I mean, he's already far exceeded what my expectations were, having had such limited experience, right, as a coach. And just, you know, again, like, I felt like he was one of those guys who suddenly his name came up. He became kind of the flavor of the month. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really expect him to get the job. But not only did he get the job, but I mean, think about where Miami was before McDaniel, right? Yeah. Under Brian Flores, people, they were kind of a sputtering outfit. They didn't have an identity. Mm-hmm. So on the one hand, you could say McDaniel totally righted the ship, gave them identity. Now, is that an identity that can win in the playoffs? I think that's the problem right there, because with the lack of experience, and B, his style of play doesn't lend to these type of playoff ugly type of games that you're going to have to win from time to time. But you could almost say the same about Tua, right? Is he a quarterback who can also win those? You got to gut it out. It's going to be ugly, but he's going to do just enough, you know, and not going to hurt you. Well, but in this particular game, I mean, you had the Kansas City's cornerback Snead. I'm sure everybody's seen it by now, where, you know, like, because it was so icy and slippery or whatever, you know, Tyreek Hill couldn't even get off the line on one. So was it a Tua's fault? Probably not. He's probably supposed to go to, you know, Tyreek on that play, but Tyreek couldn't get off the line of scrimmage. Tua had to take the sack. So that's why it's like hard to necessarily evaluate Tua, because there was that one big bomb, right? That, I mean, where he hit Tyreek on that long play. Tyreek sort of, I think, did he bobble a little, but then he ran around the defenders and scored a touchdown. So, yeah, kind of hard to say, but I feel as though when it comes to Miami at this point, more so than, you know, when the Giants decided, hey, we're just going to give Daniel Jones all that money, I feel like with at least with Tua, it's like for at least the next few years, you're going to have to ride or die with this guy.
I mean, it's, again, you have a quarterback who just led the league in yardage. And it's not as if we are in a dire era of quarterbacks. I mean, you're talking about your Patrick Mahomes, you know, even your Dak Prescott putting up big yardage, like, you know, Lamar, Burrow, Herbert, you know, Josh, like you have quarterbacks who are putting up yards, and Tua led the league in yardage. It's got to be hard to think like, oh yeah, you got to move on from him. But are you going to be able to upgrade? The Dolphins aren't in a position to draft somebody as you're drafting in the 20s. Are you really going to bank on getting lucky with a Lamar Jackson that falls to you in the 20s or a, you know, Aaron Rodgers or someone like that? Or are you going to try and go free agent? You know, like we're going to try and make a move for Dak.
There's nobody out there.
Are we going to try and bring in a Sam Darnold, Mitch Trubisky reclamation project for a year while we make a move for a young guy? It's difficult. Now, to the Dolphins' defense, they were missing six defensive starters. Like, and starters like legitimate, these were the main cogs, your Bradley Chubbs, your Jordan Phillips, your Xavier Howard. Like, these guys were difference makers in a Vic Fangio defense. And without them, it just became near impossible to put pressure on Mahomes. You're asking, you know, backups of backups to step in. Very difficult. So I think the Dolphins will be interesting to watch in the offseason. I wouldn't expect major changes, but you never know. I mean, I expect McDaniels to be back. I expect Tua will be back. Whether he gets a long-term deal or not, we'll see. But the first game Sunday, I can't say everyone is as safe or coming back as I think the Dolphins are, that being your Dallas Cowboys, the number two seed, basically playing up until the last week of the season for a shot at the number one seed. And I mean, they got 48-32. That's way deceiving. It was significantly farther apart than the score indicated. Not that I feel bad for the Cowboys or Cowboy fans, but the Niners get Green Bay. They knew that, right? You know, actually, what did you say? Shanahan said he knew that in the second quarter. He just basically,
yeah, I think he said he started breaking down Packers tape in the second quarter.
Tell me about your thoughts. Tell me about the thoughts on the game, and then we'll get into Packers specific as how it relates to the Niners.
Well, you know, as silly as it might seem, despite all the playoff woes that Dallas has experienced in the past, I was still sort of surprised because, I mean, the Cowboys were playing at home against a young and inexperienced Green Bay team that had to scratch and claw their way to the final playoff spot. But Jordan Love and Aaron Jones had themselves a hell of a game, hanging, 48 points on a Dallas team that wasn't on top of their game, to put it mildly, especially Dak Prescott, who once again seemed to wilt under the playoff pressure, throwing two costly interceptions. And I wouldn't be surprised if Jerry Jones decided to move on from both Dak and Mike McCarthy.
Dak will be a little bit harder considering his huge cap number, but I'm with you. You got Jim Harbaugh and Bill Belichick sitting out there. Money is obviously not an issue for Jerry Jones. If you're Jerry Jones and you're 81 years old, are you willing to concede a teaspoon of power to a Belichick or a Harbaugh to get them to come here? Now, I certainly don't think Jim wants GM power. Belichick may, but I think over the past couple of years, it's kind of been identified that's kind of his weak spot. and he basically generated the GM power at the Patriots just by virtue of all his winning. So I don't think either one of them, but they're definitely going to want say on their staff. They're definitely going to want say on the 53-man roster. They're going to want say, not necessarily with who they pick in every round, but they're going to want say. And if you're Jerry Jones, aren't you entertaining that? I mean, we talk about championship windows. Cowboys seem to have been in this window for a couple of years. They've gone 12-4, 12-5 last 3 years and been bounced in the wild card, bounced in the divisional round, bounced in the wild card as higher seeds. So I don't think Jerry can stand pat and just hope to let's run it back with the same group and hopefully we get a different result.
Yeah, forget championship window. Let's just talk about their window of their lives. I mean, how much longer is Jerry Jones going to be alive? And I feel like because of that, I mean, I don't know, maybe when you're that rich, you don't really think about your mortality. I would imagine that, you know, you just think, I mean, the San Diego Padres owner, I think, just kicked the bucket earlier this year and yep. or late last year, I should say. You know, and you just never know, I guess is what I'm saying. And Jerry Jones isn't getting much younger. But by the same token, neither is Bill Belichick. So I feel as though this is like the window for both sides to come together and sort of find a middle ground, a compromise. Whereas I'm sure Jerry Jones still love to have like most of the say, but like you said, is willing to concede a little bit. Whereas Bill Belichick's willing to allow a Jerry Jones to perhaps direct the ship a little bit because he still wants to coach and he wants to coach a team that, you know, is built to win now. So, yeah, I mean, I'm kind of surprised it hasn't happened already where McCarthy had been relieved of his duties and that talks are already in the works with Bill Belichick. But I also heard that Belichick feels like he has options, right? Because if Dallas should make a move, obviously that's an option for him. If Philadelphia should make a move, that could potentially be an option for him. Although I feel like, I don't know which job would be more enticing because I don't know with Philly, it seems like this was their Super Bowl or bust year, given all the, you know, veterans who either, I mean, Jason Kelsey is retiring. Mm-hmm. Fletcher Cox is a free agent. Brandon Graham's a free agent. Their defense is kind of a mess. So Jalen Hurts sort of took a step back. So I don't know. But then again, Jalen Hurts is younger,
yep.
right? He's definitely more mobile. Dak is just not that mobile anymore.
Yep.
So, yeah. So it'd be interesting if it's Bill Belichick who's sort of laying low for a while to see what his best options are.
Well, Bill Belichick's ego will not let him ride out into the sunset right now. He's 15 wins away from tying Don Shula's mark for all-time winningest coach. So he needs 16 wins. He needs 2 8-win seasons, which that's 8. That's 8-9. You don't even need to be 500, and he's going to break the record. So which team is going to give him the best opportunity to do that at least in a year and a half? Now, the wild card seems to be the Atlanta Falcons, who have conducted interviews with both Bill Belichick and Jim Harbaugh, which I don't know. Does Arthur Blank just carry that much juice that they say, oh, yeah, I want to go meet with Arthur? Because I just don't see the Falcons as a super desirable job outside of they got some skill position players. They're in a division that would seem winnable if they can get the right head coach and quarterback combination. But, you know, I mean, maybe it's just because it's Atlanta and it, you know, is ho-hum, you know, never been kind of one of the NFL blue bloods, but we'll see.
Well, no, I totally agree. I mean, I feel like the Falcons are definitely a quarterback and a competent head coach away from making noise in the NFC South. And I think Arthur Blank is a respected owner who's has a reputation of being a pleasant person to work for, very patient owner to work for, which is why I think it would be an intriguing landing spot for a Jim Harbaugh or maybe even a Bill Belichick, because like you said, they have a lot of intriguing skill position players who, you know, maybe with like a Belichick, if he could just get that defense whipped into shape and they get just a competent quarterback, you know, he doesn't have to draft. He doesn't have to be the one to figure out which receiver or which skill position to draft, which has been his bugaboo, right?
Yep.
You've got Kyle Pitts, you've got Drake London, you've got Bijan Robinson. So the pieces are there in Atlanta.
We're going to get into a lot of what coaches and quarterbacks are going to land where, because there's a lot of questions out there. But the team on the flip side of the Cowboys on wildcard weekend was the 7th-seeded Green Bay Packers. You mentioned last podcast that you were surprised when you looked at the numbers about how many touchdowns Jordan Love had thrown. And I think you said third most in the NFL at the end of the season.
Yeah, that's right. The third most touchdowns of all starting quarterbacks. Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, break it down. Jordan Love, the Green Bay Packers dismantled the Cowboys. And as the 7th seed, that locked in lowest seed playing the Niners. Coming to Levi by virtue of the Eagles and Bucks playing on Monday night, you knew their game was not going to be on Saturday. That would be a complete disservice to have a team basically go on 4 days rest and practice for your next game. So you knew the Niners were locked in on Saturday. They get the Saturday evening game. It's a renewal of playoff rivals. How many times in the past 5, 6 years have it been Niners, Packers, and we get another iteration this Saturday night? The Niners installed as a 9.5-point favorite already. So, you know,
it's interesting.
Initial thoughts.
It's interesting. If you think about it over the years, right, we've had the Favre versus Young. We've had the do we ever have Garcia? No, I don't think Garcia played against the Packers. But we've definitely had the Aaron Rodgers against the Colin Kaepernick, the Aaron Rodgers against the Garoppolo. And now we've got Jordan Love versus Brock Purdy. And to be honest, it makes me nervous that the Niners are favored by 9.5 points. Because, you know, this team has had a habit of being a little too overconfident when they're heavily favored. Plus, they'll have had 2 weeks off, which is obviously great for healing bumps and bruises, especially for the vets. But, you know, will there be some rust to shake off, or will they play tight? Whereas the Packers have essentially been in playoff mode for the past however many weeks. And as we were just talking about, beat the pants off of the Cowboys on the road, no less. Although I'm hoping this could all work in the Niners' favor, that the Green Bay Packers destroyed that Dallas Cowboys, because hopefully it got the Niners' attention first and foremost, so they won't take them so lightly. And it definitely gave Shanahan and company plenty of tape to dissect. So the Niners should be prepared for whatever Green Bay is going to be throwing their way.
Interesting note, and I'll have to have the Niner guys, fact checkers on staff, double check this, but this will be the 10th playoff contest between the Packers and the Niners. Okay. That is the most of any two teams in NFL playoff history.
That's cool.
Surprising. I mean, 10 actually doesn't seem like that much. I mean, it seems like the Niners have played the Cowboys. I mean, maybe it's just because, I don't know, the couple in the 80s, you know, the catch and the year before, it's like, okay, there's two. And then it was the young three in a row. And then, you know, we get a couple like we got last 2 years. So maybe it's only like 7 or 8 really, but it just seemed like there's a lot more. But you're right. You had the Favre years, you had against Young, you've had the last couple of years with the Robbie Gould in the snow kick, you had the Jimmy Garoppolo 6 of 8, not on a drive, in a whole game, as the team ran 40 some odd time, and Raheem Mostert racked up 220 something yards. So, 10th meeting, including 5 times since 2000, the Niners winning 4 of those 5 games. So some historical nuggets there that I thought were interesting. But the thing that worries me is more on the Niners side, because what I saw the Packers do, they didn't seem to do anything that I thought, oh, that's going to be hard to stop. Because now they had some creative plays. They were thrown to some, I mean, Love was thrown to some wide open receivers. Now, whether that's scheme or defensive breakdown, I don't know. You're hoping that, you know, when you got, you know, Mooney Ward out there and you got Fred Warner out there, that you're not going to have such massive defensive breakdowns. Everyone except Cleveland Farrell seems to be, you know, all hands on deck, including Eric Armstead. I don't think the Packers are going to be able to run the ball effectively, whereas the Niners, I would think, can run the ball effectively. And weather might play a factor come Saturday night, because there might be some rain in the area and some wind. So if the reason the Packers got to the playoffs and got to this point is because of Jordan Love's throwing ability, well, that's going to be a little bit of a tougher ordeal in any inclement weather. Whereas I think the Niners would be, I think you asked Kyle Shanahan and said, Kyle, we got to run the ball 50 times. I think he's completely okay with that.
Yeah. And I mean, there certainly were some egregiously wide open receivers for Jordan Love to throw to, but he also made some pretty impressive throws off his back foot. So, I mean, and you know, it's funny, as I'm seeing Jordan Love thrive, and I know you're going to hate me for even bringing this up, but I couldn't help but think of Trey Lance and whether this was Kyle Shanahan's plan for Trey last year, right? Because if you recall, Love got off to a very rocky start to this season, to the point where people started questioning whether Green Bay might be needing to look for a different signal caller in the offseason, because the team got off to a 2-5 start. Mm-hmm. I mean, hell, they even lost to the Raiders when Josh McDaniels was still coaching in Vegas. Mm-hmm. But after getting a half season worth of reps, which we all kept saying, Lance need reps, things started clicking. And like I mentioned in our last podcast, and as you mentioned, right, Love ended up throwing for what is the third most touchdowns of all starting quarterbacks this season, which I'm sure nobody saw that coming. And I'm not saying Lance would have exploded the way Love has, but perhaps this is just what Kyle Shanahan had envisioned for Trey, and why I hadn't given up on him the same way that many others had.
I'm sure that was the plan, right? We know what the dream scenario is for coaches. It's you have Brett Favre and you draft Aaron Rodgers and you let him sit, and then he takes over and he has a Hall of Fame career led by, we're going to draft Jordan Love and he's going to sit, and then he comes in, and even though it's a rocky start, he blossoms, and, you know, boy, it just looks like we just continue to churn out quarterbacks, which on one hand, it's like, why doesn't everyone just do this? Well, patience is one. Like, not very many teams have the patience to draft a first round quarterback and go, like, we're good for 3 or 4 years, right? Like, you're asking them to, you know, sit during their entire rookie deal. Now, for the Packers, it's worked. I'm certainly impressed with what Jordan Love has done. I thought it'd be somewhere in the middle from what the beginning of the season was and what the end of the season was, right? I thought he would continue to perform. They still didn't have, you know, the marquee weapons, you know, that you would think, oh, this is the guy, these are the guys who can really help a young quarterback. But LaFleur, you know, did a pretty darn good job coaching. They accentuated their positives of, hey, let's, you know, we're going to throw the ball. We're going to get the ball out quickly. We're going to, you know, try and matriculate down the field, which was, side note, one thing, the Dallas Packer game, Green Bay won the toss and elected to receive. Most of the time you win the toss, you defer, you want the ball. They're like, no, we want the ball. They got the ball and they marched right down and got the touchdown. So I would imagine that's what we're going to see, because if Green Bay wins, I would expect them to take the ball first. If the Niners win, I would expect them to defer, thus giving the ball to the Packers first. So you want to talk about what's a big drive? Right out of the gate, it's going to be a big drive, because the Packers are probably going to want to establish themselves because they want the ball first. And the Niners are like, yeah, we want you to have the ball first. So, you know, rock, hard place, meet each other type of thing. So the 9.5-point spread is interesting because it's just so big for a playoff. Now, I know it's one seed against seven seed, but that's a huge margin, right?
And I wouldn't even look at it that way because I almost feel like, I mean, if you're looking at the way that everything's shaken out, I'd much rather be playing the Bucks than the
oh,
Packers.
yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't look at the Packers, especially given how they've been playing their momentum, as a seventh seed.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we can get it more in the Niners, but let's talk real quickly about the other two playoff games, Buffalo and the Steelers. You said you didn't really get a chance to see because you forgot there was a Monday afternoon game. The Bills we talked about last week have been in playoff mode for weeks now, and it showed. They looked, it's hard to say. They looked good, but the Steelers didn't look great. The Steelers somehow finagled their way to a 10-win season, but they certainly didn't look like some of the other 10-win teams in the league. TJ Watt obviously didn't play. That could have been a factor. Mason Rudolph was the quarterback. It was bad weather, so getting Najee Harris and Jaylen Warren, you know, moving was tough. They kind of stuck in there with a blocked field goal that they ended up turning into points, but the Bills move on, setting up a Bills Chiefs game in the divisional round in Buffalo, which Buffalo in January, I got to imagine, is going to be cold, possible snow and all kinds of bad weather. So
where did all the snow go? That's my question, right? Like in the days leading up to the game, it was like the whole stadium was buried in snow. They had to have people actually come and help shovel. But then, I mean, the pictures that I saw thereafter was like, wait a minute. It's almost as if it never snowed, unless you look in the stands. Like in the stands, they didn't seem to care. There's tons of snows in the stand. But everywhere on the field, like, what happened to all the snow? Where'd it go? Like, yeah, you shovel it, but don't you shovel it off to the side so you know, you see it off to the edge by the sideline or something. I did not see any snow.
You're going to have to ask someone who is more fluent with snow and snow removal than I am.
Snow groundskeepers.
Yeah. I mean, as we sit here in the middle of January, I am still in shorts and flip flops. So California weather, it is no shoveling snow for me. Last game of the Super Wild Card weekend, Bucks Eagles. We touched on how bad the Bucks looked and how Nick Sirianni is meeting with ownership tomorrow for a possible, I don't know, relieving him of his duties or giving him the thumbs up that he can coach or telling him, yeah, you can stay, but you got to get new coordinators. I don't know what's going to happen, but the Bucks looked good. And I say that kind of with a question mark because did they really look good? I mean, did they look good or did the Eagles look bad? Was it a combination? And would you expect this same Tampa Bay offensive explosion to carry their way to Detroit next weekend indoors? That's going to help, obviously, Tampa. But I don't know how much of it, how much percentage-wise was X percent good Bucks, X percent bad Eagles.
Yeah, as unimaginable as it was for the Eagles to have completely melted down after a 10-1 start, I think it was just as hard to imagine that this Baker Mayfield, who led the Bucks to the AFC South title and to Sunday's playoff win, is the same Baker Mayfield who was relegated to playing on Carolina's scout team last year after getting demoted, right? And this is the same guy who also threw many errant passes during training camp, if you should recall, where those videos ended up going viral. And we're like, oh yeah, this is going to be a lost season for the Tampa Bay Bucks. So I would have to say that the win was a combination of Baker Mayfield just turning it around for himself, for the Bucks, but equally the Eagles sort of complete downslide and losing their entire sense of their identity. Like I mentioned before, they weren't even able to punch in the brotherly shove, which they've been doing it like with ease, yep, all season up till now. And I thought it was interesting that was it? There was a linebacker who sort of jumped over the pile a la Fred Warner, right? So it's kind of like, seriously, like, I know Nick Bosa felt a little bit bad about saying, oh, yeah, we gave the league the blueprint for, like, the Cowboys to beat the Cowboys and to beat the Eagles. But literally, I feel like they did, right? Like, a lot of the things that, that teams ended up doing to these, you know, to Philly and to Dallas were what we saw the Niners do then.
The Niners broke them. And I mean, whether that means by just giving the league the blueprint or exposing the extreme weaknesses, I don't know, but.
Well, they got Big Dom off the sideline. I think that that really killed them.
Maybe it did, you know, maybe that, you know, maybe that was it, but that, I know Jalen Hurts was hurt, whether the knee, the finger, those things just happen. Those things happen. And I mean, again, not to put the fans idiot, you know, the idiocy of the fans on Jalen Hurts, but hey, Eagles fans, tough to play when you don't have a quarterback, huh? Oh, like, it's like, I mean, again, it's like, oh, we would have wiped the floor with you anyway. I mean, I just can't have that rational discussion with anyone, especially now going, did you guys just went down to Tampa and got crushed by Baker Mayfield and your offense couldn't do anything. Now, what that means for AJ Brown, I think, is a huge question mark, because this guy was killing it the first half of the season. He had like 8 or 10 straight games of like 150 yards, some crazy stat. And the fact that he scrubbed his Instagram, the fact that he didn't travel, the fact that there's all these questions about, was he as hurt as he indicated? You know, because, you know, oh, he was walking around during practice. He wasn't wearing a brace, and oh, now he can't play. And, you know, Sirianni saying, well, you know, hey, I know he worked hard to try, blah, blah. But I think the Eagles got, some major question marks they're going to have to, you know, look into. And with all the coaching moves that are going on, I think it's going to be hard for Philadelphia ownership to look at Nick Sirianni, a guy who we've said over and over, does not call defensive plays, does not call offensive plays. He is just there to manage the game. He doesn't even do that very well. It's hard for me to think that they're going to say, yeah, we trust you to go make two really good hires, one on each side of the ball, because you had opportunities to get an offensive coordinator and a defensive coordinator last year when when Gannon and Steichen left, and you blew that, and you had to replace your defensive coordinator with Matt Patricia, which definitely didn't go well. So does ownership really want to entrust this guy to make these decisions for, you know, the future of the Philadelphia Eagles, or at least the near future? I don't know. Where you want to go? You want to talk Niners in terms of what you think they need to do, will do, have to do, rust versus rest? Got any thoughts on any of that? Do you want to chime in on some of the coaching thoughts? Why haven't the Raiders just given Antonio Pierce the job, and why have they been interviewing and letting Pierce interview other places if he's their guy? I mean, where do you want to go before we wrap up Super Wild Card Weekend podcast?
Well, I feel like we've sort of touched on the Niners-Packers game. I'll just conclude by saying I do think, obviously, if everything goes according to how it should, meaning weird things don't happen in the game, right? Like a weird injury, or if, you know, the rain doesn't somehow come in just when Brock Purdy's throwing the ball and it just messes with him. If things go as we expect them to go and they're just, it's a normal game, the Niners should win. I think the Packers offensive line isn't able to contain the Niners defensive line, barring a bunch of holding that isn't going to be called. And that's the thing, right? I know you hate it when I mention the refs, but they're a part of the equation. If the refs call it like they should be calling the game, again, I think the Niners should win. But if for whatever reason the calls become a little one-sided, or maybe not even so much one-sided as when there are key moments in the game, how many of those calls favor the Niners versus the Packers, right? Like, let's say Elgin Jenkins takes down Nick Bosa, but he doesn't get flagged for it. And on that play, they're able to throw a touchdown, right? Like, how many of those plays are the Packers going to get versus not going to get? And I think that that could have an impact as well, unfortunately.
Totally agree with all of that. I mean, I think the Niners are the better team. I think there isn't a player that I would, or position group that I would trade just straight up with the Packers. I think the Niners, you know, have the edge across the board. I think the Niners have the edge in coaching. I think the Niners obviously have the home field advantage. I would imagine that the Levi's will be loud and rocking as it usually is around playoff time. So I do think that the Niners should come out and take care of business. Now, with that said, I want to rewind just for a second, because last podcast I talked about how the team I didn't want to face was the Rams. I thought the Rams had a good shot against to be the most competitive team against the Niners, because I believed in McVay as a head coach, because I believed in Stafford as a quarterback, Cooper Kupp, Puka Nacua. Like, I know the Niners have had their number for a long time. It wasn't even recency bias that they fell to them in week 18. There was something about that division rivalry that I was not keen on. Now, it was hard. I already knew who they were playing since the Packers won before the Lions even came onto the field. So there wasn't even go Lions. Come on, Dan Campbell. So the fact that they got ousted was huge in my mind, because not that I want to look way ahead, but you're talking Detroit against Tampa Bay. One of those teams is playing in the NFC Championship game for a chance to go to the Super Bowl. Like, neither one of those teams is seemingly scary, or again, seems to match up with the Niners up and down the lineup. So this was darn near a perfect weekend for them. Now, the only thing that could have been better, I guess, is if Dallas won and then the Niners are going to be playing, you know, then the Niners would be playing the Bucks. Man, probably a slightly easier game this week. And then having to play either a Dallas or a Detroit in the NFC Championship game. Again, I still think the Niners are better. However, hard to say this now after seeing what they did. Dallas was a little worrisome just because their offense could score points, because they played them last year in the playoffs, and it was a close game for most of the game. So, you know, the fact that the Niners' probably toughest opponent is going to be this week in the divisional series, could you have asked for a better planned layout, I guess?
Yeah, actually, I disagree with all that. You know, everybody's saying, oh, man, this paves the way for the Niners to go to the Super Bowl. Like, no, I don't think so. I actually think it would have been better. And maybe just because of how their regular season games went, I'm like, they blew out the Cowboys and the Eagles. So I'm like, I would have much rather have faced those guys, because we are in their heads. We are living rent-free in their heads. And we showed that, oh my God, like, we can destroy those guys. So now there's this kind of unpredictability of the Packers. They're this young, hungry team that's playing with house money, right? There's no pressure on them at all. This is all gravy. Whereas, you know, for the Niners, it's a Super Bowl or bust year. They're favored by 9.5 points. I usually get worried about stuff like that. And maybe it's because I'm still scarred from 1980, whatever, when the Niners lost to the Minnesota Vikings. And you're just sitting there going, what the hell happened? Yeah. So, yeah. So that's why for me, I don't necessarily think that this is the easier path. And I know that you were afraid of the Rams. And do you remember what team I was afraid of?
No.
The Lions. The Lions was the team that I was afraid of, because they're in a very similar situation where Dude, this is the first time they've won a playoff game in 32 years, right? So now everything is gravy. And so there's no, again, also no, not only no real pressure on the Detroit Lions, but these guys play with such reckless abandon. Dude, they took out Tyler Higbee's thing. He has a torn ACL because of the Lions, right? Like, they just don't give an F because they bite their people's kneecaps off. I mean, that's the thing. So I think that if should the Niners beat the Packers, which I believe they should, they will, I believe they're going to be facing the Lions. And again, on paper, the Niners should win. Because the reason why, in my opinion, the Niners and the Ravens, for that matter, are the best two teams in the league, in large part because they have the best linebackers in the league, right? And I think that's where a lot of teams get exposed and taken advantage of. That's why you see all these passes kind of going over the middle, because their linebackers can't cover or can't, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so, or if they're run up against, like, it's the kind of a dearth of really good linebackers, but the Niners and Ravens have super good linebackers, and which is why they're so good. And that's why I feel as though the Packers shouldn't be able to expose the Niners the way they did against the Cowboys. And the same with, like, if we face the Lions as well. But at the same time, against the Lions, man, that is such a wild card team. That's why that's the team that I'd rather face the Eagles. I'd rather face the Cowboys.
Well, I mean, we'll see. But I mean, we obviously have very different views of the Lions. I'm not scared at all. I mean, and part of it is the numbers wise, they give up the most big passing plays in the league, most of them over the middle. I mean, talk about bread and butter for the night. Like, you allow the middle of the field to be open for Ayuk, Debo, and Kittle. I'll take that. And
I'm not even gonna say, like, oh, I'm afraid we're gonna lose, as much as it's like, what's it gonna take to win, right? Like, how many pounds of flesh are they gonna take out of the Niners, you know, by the end of the game? And maybe it's, again, I get scarred by previous experiences. And the last time we played the Lions, we were up ahead by a lot, and holy crap, Shanahan had to put the starters back in.
Yeah.
Right, because they were making a comeback, and was that the game that that Jason Verrett blew out his Achilles, and I think somebody else, I think Mostert got hurt.
Yep.
Just saying that experience scarred me, and I mean we didn't have that kind of stuff going up against the Cowboys.
We'll see. I'm excited and happy that we hopefully get to have that conversation next week when Lions, Niners for a chance to go to Las Vegas and play in the Super Bowl. So we'll check that out. Quickly before we get out of here, thoughts on Jim Harbaugh? You know, he's interviewed with the Chargers, he's interviewed with the Falcons, Bill Belichick. You kind of, you know, laid, maybe he's just laying low, waiting for one of these other teams to open up. I didn't know that they put in a new rule that you can't hire someone until after the divisional round. So, I mean, maybe that's why all these teams seem to have such long and lengthy interview lists, because they have time. They have, well, we got nothing else to do for 2 weeks, so just keep guys coming in. Like, just keep the train moving. So, and I guess the funniest one was, you know, hours after the Cowboys lost, Dan Quinn, whose defense just gave up 40 some odd points at home, is being requested for head coaching gig. So any thoughts on the coaching carousel that's happening?
Yeah, I mean, well, to me, the most interesting thing since our last podcast was the parting of ways, obviously, between Bill Belichick and the Patriots, but Pete Carroll as well.
Yeah.
You know, kind of been giving the boot from Seattle. And I think at the time I was just thinking, all right, so what does this mean for these guys who, you know, kind of old heads in the league? Are they going to get another opportunity? Because it sure looks like they both still would like to coach. And I know we've talked about Bill Belichick and the opportunities that he might have. But I'm not sure. I don't know. Like, do you think Pete Carroll might be getting another opportunity? Because I just look at some of these teams and it's like, well, what are you going to be looking for, right? Like, I know that we have some listeners who care about the Raiders. So let's talk about the Raiders, right? I think for me, I think for the Raiders, it really depends on Mark Davis and his whole financial situation, right? Because he's still paying both John Gruden and Josh McDaniels after their dismissals, right? So could money be tight so that in essence, he would have really no other choice but to elevate Antonio Pierce to a permanent status? Because, gosh, I can't imagine him going after a big fish and having to pay another monumental contract. But Davis has allowed Pierce to interview with other teams like the Titans. I didn't realize that they couldn't make a hire until after the divisional round. So maybe that's why, because again, there's just time to kill. But it sort of does make me think whether or not Davis wants to make a big splash because he's tired of seeing his stadium filled with so many visiting fans. But I just don't know if he'll be able to land a Jim Harbaugh this time around or even a Bill Belichick without having like a proven quarterback already in tow. Plus they also need a new general manager. So, I mean, will Davis hire a new GM first and then hire a coach who the GM wants? I don't know. Like, do you think, which direction do you think Davis will go? Like, do you think he'll stick with Pierce since he's probably maybe kicking himself for not hanging on Rich Bisaccia, or does he go after a big name from like maybe even a Mike Vrabel?
Well, Vrabel's the other guy that I thought was a possible match. To me, Vrabel is a culture changing guy, kind of. He's Dan Campbell with a little more etiquette, I guess. Like he doesn't, you know, he won't talk about biting kneecaps, but he talks about, you know, wanting and delivering a physical brand of football. He talks about establishing a running game, a defense. He obviously has come from not only the Bill Belichick coaching tree, but he played in New England for so many years. So I could see them going that direction. It does seem like Davis is kind of a little bit gun shy after the hiring of Josh McDaniels because the players seem to be siding with Rich Bisaccia during that tenure, the end of game, end of season tenure. And once again, you hear Max Crosby and Devontae Adams, you know, going to bat for Antonio Pierce. I would be leery of Antonio Pierce just from he hasn't done it before. He hasn't, you know, led an organization. And not even an organization from a head coaching standpoint, as a lead coordinator. I mean, remember, he's coming from the linebacker coaching position. And before that, he was at Arizona State. So this could be a huge, gigantic step for him. Is he ready to do all of those things that are asked of a head coach? And, or was it this midseason bump it was just an adrenaline rush. The adrenaline of getting Josh McDaniels out of there just invigorated the rest of the team, and they just felt loose and could play. And, you know, that only lasts for so long. You know, you always seem to get a bump whenever you change coaches in midseason. I would be leery. However, I think that's the direction Mark Davis is going to go, because I don't think he's going to bring in Belichick, although that would be an interesting dynamic because the whole Tom Brady partial ownership of the Raiders. Could Tom sell, you know, not literally sell, but could he sell the Raiders organization to Bill, and would Bill be okay coming in as Tom's employee? that would be an interesting dynamic. Jim Harbaugh obviously has the ties to the Raiders. That's where Al Davis hired him and gave him his first NFL coaching job. So there's that. I don't know if Mark Davis has the financial wherewithal or backing to be able to roll out what's it going to cost? $100 million, you know, 5 years, $100 million for one of those coaches. I think he can get away with, you know, 4 years, $50 million, you know, for Antonio Pierce. I think he can get away with slightly more for that for Vrabel. So it'll be interesting. Plus, they're still looking for a general manager. You know, they're still looking to do that, and I think you and I touched on it earlier, was, is it just because they have this long time frame that they're interviewing all these people? Because it doesn't seem like they're going with the traditional, we zero in on one and then that person helps us or at least signs off on the other, whether it be the Kyle Shanahan, we're hiring Kyle Shanahan and he is signing off on John Lynch being his, general manager, or you go like the direction the Washington Commanders are going. They hired Adam Peters as their general manager and he's going to select the next head coach. So, the Raiders don't seem to be doing that, and it might just be because they got all this time to interview. And I would hope that, I would hope this is why this rule is put in place, to let these teams not have to make such a snap decision, not just to be like, hey, we're out of the playoffs, interview these three guys, take the best one off the market. So we'll have to see what happens like that. But
Well, and it also gives guys like Ben Johnson of Detroit an opportunity because he's still in it, right? He's
sure.
still in the middle of the playoffs. And it's kind of, for those kind of guys, it's always been hard to land jobs at times because they've just been sort of dividing their time between, well, I still got to get my current team ready for the playoffs, but I am interested in a head coaching job. And that, they don't have time to form a new their staff while they're still figuring out the game plan for the following week. So, but going back to the Raiders and Antonio Pierce, what to me what's interesting is this: when you look at it, of yes, like there have been a lot of, I think, interim coaches where teams have gotten that bump mid-season, but how many of those coaches have had their interim removed from their title and made the permanent coach the following year, and how many of those people have been successful, right? Because like the Raiders, I can remember they did it with Tom Campbell, and that didn't, or sorry, Tom Cable, and that didn't work out all that well. So that's all I'm saying is like, do they see Antonio Pierce as like an anomaly? Like he's not like one of those guys that, in fact, he could be like the next Mike Tomlin, and so let's get ahead of it and just hire him because that's who he could be. Or is he just going to be just another of these run-of-the-mill interim head, coaches who sort of, like you say, inspire the players mid-season because they're done with a guy that they just kicked to the curb and they feel more free and they just play well because he did finish the season over 500, which is saying a lot for the Raiders.
I'm looking at this list and I don't see a lot of guys interims who have become the head coach. I mean, you're talking just go last couple of years. Steve Wilks, interim, did not get the job. Jeff Saturday did not get the job. Jerry Rosenberg for the Broncos did not get the job. The year before, Bisaccia and Darrell Bevell took over for Urban Meyer. Neither one of them got the job. Darrell Bevell, again, the previous year, got the job when Matt Patricia was fired. Midseason, Raheem Morris became the interim when Dan Quinn was let go in Atlanta. Romeo Crennel and the took over from Bill O'Brien. Bill Callahan in Washington, Perry Fuel, Joe Philbin, Greg Williams. There aren't a lot of, in
So as
fact,
we can see, it's just not the standard operating procedure
you
for
got
this
to go all the
offense
way
to.
back to 2016 when Doug Marrone replaced Gus Bradley
Oh, wow. In
for the
Jacksonville.
Jaguars and remained in that role for another 3 years. So it doesn't happen. It certainly doesn't happen in recent history. So
And Doug Marrone didn't exactly work out either. So.
he didn't set the world on fire. No. It was Pat Shermer took over for Chip Kelly, Mike Mularkey for Ken Whisenhunt. I wonder if the Dolphins at all regret not giving it to Dan Campbell, who replaced Joe Philbin in 2015.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that because I recall Dan Campbell doing a pretty good job as an interim coach, and I was kind of surprised they didn't just stick with Dan Campbell.
And of course, I mean, not to put sour notes out there, but Jim Tomsula replaced Mike Singletary for a single game.
But then he got a then he got the job later on, which, as we all know, was a disaster. I think it's interesting that Atlanta is interviewing Raheem Morris for the job, which he held as an interim, and they didn't hire him, and now they're interviewing him. I think that's kind of funny.
My bold prediction is Morris takes the Seattle job.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah,
interesting.
I would put if you're gonna tell me the odds of the coaches getting jobs, I think Belichick and Harbaugh are locks. I think Ben Johnson for the Lions is probably kind of third on my list. I think Morris would be fourth in that 4-5 category. I think he's getting a head coaching job. I think he's going to end up in Seattle. So
interesting. I actually think that Seattle will either go young, like a Ben Johnson, or they'll go for Jim Schwartz because Schwartz gives the 49ers and Kyle Shanahan fits. And they may just go, you know what? We just need to beat the Niners. So Jim Schwartz, get him on the line.
Let's wrap this up. We don't have any more locks of the week officially, but tell me who you think are going to win the four games this weekend.
I got what? Lions over Bucks. I got Niners over Packers. I'm going to go Buffalo over the Chiefs. And I'll go Ravens over the Texans.
Yes, I would agree with all of those. Setting up, I guess that'd be 1-2 in the AFC, Ravens, Bills, and 1-3, Niners, Lions. I gotta think the NFL would be happy with that, with the names, the stars, and everyone, you know, in that championship weekend. So I think the script writers will buy into that. Anything else before we get out of here, or before we get to your final thought, I should say?
No, just wrap things up with my final thought, which is I just actually wanted to wish your daughter, Ellie Kleinhines, good luck as she is. Well, you should probably just tell the story on where she is and what she's competing for and why. I'm not sure if we're going to have a podcast next week.
Thank you. She is currently in South Korea and has been there for the past week. She is on the U.S. luge team as a member of Team USA, and the Youth Olympics are taking place in South Korea. So I think 74 nations, 1,900 athletes, all converging on the Asian city of, well, it's actually spread out. The sliding events are in Pyeongchang and some of them are in Seoul, and they're spread out throughout the country. But she will be competing as the U.S. representative in the women's luge event. So I will be taking off tomorrow morning for that very long 12 and a half hour flight from San Francisco to Seoul, South Korea. That will be quite an adventure. I actually don't know if is there a longer flight? I don't even know if going to Australia is longer. So
I was going to say,
it's going to be a long flight. I'm going to have plenty of stretch breaks.
Between movies, get up.
I got the iPad loaded up with, you know, plenty of movies. I'll try and stay active as well as try and keep an eye on the clock to figure out when I should sleep, so I'm not completely off when I get there. But thank you for the well wishes. She's been training. She left New Year's Eve, December 31st, for about almost 2 weeks in New York, Lake Placid, and then went straight from Lake Placid to Korea. So looking forward to getting to see her, getting ready to see her compete on the worldwide stage. So yeah, that takes place on Saturday morning. So yeah.
Awesome. Awesome.
It's very, very, very exciting. Certainly, you know, chance of a lifetime. I'll have to regale everyone with how I even got on this luge roller coaster at some point. So we'll have to see what happens there. So, yes. I will, final thought being, yes, I've started to download many movies, many recommended by yourself, a couple listeners, as to what I need to you know, pass the time while I go to Korea. And I will say, I watched Lift, the movie on Netflix with Kevin Hart. It's the Italian job, like theft heist type movie,
On an airplane?
in an airplane. Yes. There's an airplane, there's boats, there's all kinds of stuff. So I'd recommend that because that was something I enjoyed. So that's just a nice light piece. I know as the NFL playoffs are going, you know, football fans are locked in, but you need a couple hour break, do that. And I have a whole list of things that I'll be diving into entertainment wise when I'm on the plane. So I'm gonna come back next podcast with a full Siskel and Ebert thumbs up, thumbs down on a wide range of things.
Awesome.
So yes, I will do that. With that said, yes, we will have to see when our next podcast will be. I hope, regardless, I hope you and I are exchanging texts late Saturday for you, early Sunday for me, about what an incredible victory it was for the Niners to move on in the playoffs. So fingers crossed, Niner fans, go out there, make Levi's loud, make it tough on Green Bay, celebrate a win respectfully if that's what happens. But just go out and be good people. Be good people, everyone. So for Jerry Sue, I'm Todd Kleinheinz. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Niner Guys. Enjoy the playoffs. We'll see you.